You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again to the radio show. My name is JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We are coming to you on your very favorite network for truth and alternative information, Truth Frequency Radio. You can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com. You can find us at redpillreports.com. And you can find us on the dial at 90.7 under the beautiful skyline of Denver, Colorado. Today's date is the 15th day of May. It is a Friday. Congratulations, ladies and gentlemen. We have made it all the way to the end of another week, and what a week it has been here at the Red Pill. I have to tell you guys, absolutely amazing guest lineup all week. If you guys did not, I know we've had some feed issues, so if you guys were tuned in to Carl's show yesterday and weren't getting it all, I checked the archives. They are epic, so definitely go back and check that out. What a great week it's been so far. It's not going to end today. I'll tell you right now, we've got Andrew Gause coming on the program here in about an hour. He is a monetary historian and a numismatic expert, and obviously will be able to kind of get us into the frame of mind of what exactly is going on economically right now. Obviously, you know, Greece paying the IMF, or rather the IMF paying the IMF via proxy through Greece with the SDRs that they gave to Greece in the first place, is strange to me. And why we're not calling this a default, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. Maybe hopefully Andrew will help us get our minds around that. But anyway, definitely looking forward to having Andrew Gause on here in about an hour. We have a lot of news to go over today. I got to give you guys a heads up, though. I am absolutely exhausted this morning. We had a neighborhood watch meeting at 4:30 this morning, guys. 4:30 this morning, neighborhood watch. And I guess I should clarify that I wasn't actually invited to the neighborhood watch meeting, and neither were any of the people here in my neighborhood. But what actually happened was every single bird in the Tri-County area decided to get together and have a meeting this morning right outside of my window at about 4 o'clock. And I had to put earplugs in, guys. That's about how bad it was yesterday. So here's my question for all of you guys in the chat room. Do I get a fake owl? Do I get some of that reflective tape and hang it in the tree? What do I do? Because I'm, you know, I was really at the point, I almost got an axe out and started chopping the tree down this morning. That's how bad it was. And I'm not anti-nature. I just want it to stay far away from me at 4 o'clock in the morning. I seriously almost had like a Joe Pesci moment where I just went outside with a revolver and just started shooting shots in the air, but I knew it wouldn't do anything. So anybody out there that's got a solution for getting rid of these stupid birds, woo, I would really appreciate it this morning. Really appreciate it. So anyway, I'm firing on about 3 cylinders of 8 right now. So hopefully the show will still go well. Hopefully all the feed issues that we've been having, I know Chris has been working feverishly behind the scenes to get all of that dealt with, and really appreciate all the work that he's been doing over the last couple days. Gotta tell you too, first of all, if you guys didn't hear KBS yesterday, you need to go back and listen to the Kev Baker Show, because they do the fortnightly, which for all of my American brothers and sisters out here, that means every other week. It took me about a month of living in the UK before I figured out what a fortnight was. They'd tell me, oh, this assignment's due in a fortnight. And I thought, what, like tomorrow? What are you talking about? And then it took me a while to figure that out. But that means every 2 weeks, and every 2 weeks they do this Tough Talk Thursday, and they have Luke and Rob and also Alex from the Ukraine on. Just an absolutely epic show yesterday. And if you guys didn't get a chance to hear that, I definitely would recommend going back and downloading that. Getting an opportunity to hear from somebody like Alex who actually lives in the Ukraine, you're just not going to get news like that anywhere. And KBS does such a great job. And then also, holy cow, So excited to have Popeye back on the network last night. He took a huge road trip around the country and got back last night to do a live show and did a 2-hour live show with Rebecca Roth, ladies and gentlemen. And if you guys missed that, I listened to the whole thing. I wasn't in the chat room the whole time, but I was absolutely glued because those are probably two of the most well-educated 9/11 researchers that there are on the planet. And we got to hear them both discussing 9/11 last night. Absolutely amazing. If you guys haven't checked out Rebecca Roth's book yet, What Are You Doing? methodicalillusion.com. Definitely check that out. And definitely if you're interested in that show from yesterday, Popeye did such a great job. Do definitely go and download that. Just to give you guys a heads up about next week, get you guys in the loop on the guests. Chris and Cherie Gio will be with us on Monday. Who knows what we'll talk about. I love chatting with Chris, though. He's always willing to go just about anywhere, and both of those people have got such a great amount of information in their minds. Gary Milievsky, founder of Stoop Wall, will be here on Tuesday, so we'll be talking about, you know, being safe on the internet, being safe with applications and things like that, and we've had a lot of great discussions with him in the past, so definitely looking forward to having Gary back on. And then Wednesday, Deborah Tavares will be on, a woman who probably needs no introduction for any of you guys out there who are regular listeners, one of the most well-documented anti-Agenda 21 advocates out there in the world. Activists really would be a better place to, better way to say that. So always bringing us very, very up to date and sometimes scary information. She lives in California and she's kind of at the on the forefront of everything that's going on out there. Thursday, we're going to have the one and only Foster Gamble on the program. And then Friday's show, Benjamin Hornstein is going to be here. Now, Benjamin Hornstein runs a company called Eccentricity Coffee, and he is essentially a coffee expert. And so I know there's a lot of people out there who really like coffee. I got this feeling that Benjamin's going to come on the air and tell us we've all been making it wrong, guys. He does really, really amazing coffee brewing techniques, very hot kind of stuff. And so definitely looking forward to that, learning a little bit more about coffee in general and how we can all be making it better, just kind of as a fun show. So I'm looking forward to that next week. So again, that's where we are at right now. Jumping into the news today like we do in the first hour, I do want to quickly say we do need to take a quick moment of silence. B.B. King, the legendary blues guitar player, did pass away last night after a long battle. He did pass away in his sleep. I believe he was suffering from cancer, but I'm not quite sure right now. But again, B.B. King did pass away yesterday, and what a tragic loss to the music community that is. Just absolutely unbelievable. So that's kind of where we're starting today. Take a quick moment of silence, send some prayers to BB and his family and things like that, because, man, that's a big loss. Okay. Let's hop into the international news. There's a lot of stuff going on today. And as of yesterday, there was a lot of stuff going on. So, yesterday, 5 Iranian boats actually fired shots across the bow of a Singapore flagged cargo vessel in the Persian Gulf in an attempt to potentially stop the ship. And this is according to U.S. officials and what they were telling to CNN yesterday. So for the first time, the incident brought another Persian Gulf nation into this recent rising maritime tension in the region. It's not really clear yet if any of the rounds hit the Alpine Eternity. That was the name of the boat. There were no U.S. citizens or cargo on board, and the Pentagon currently is still gathering information about the incident. But this incident basically began when 5 small fast boats believed to be manned by Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy approached a cargo vessel just off the coast of the UAE, but in international waters. And the Iranian boats fired across the bow, and at the point, the cargo vessel actually turned and escaped by entering into the UAE territorial waters, according to the initial U.S. military reports of the incident. And the UAE sent 3 of its Coast Guard vessels out to the cargo vessel, and this incident began with the Iranians ordering the ship into Iranian waters. And when the shipmaster refused, Iran began to fire in a way to try and disable the ship. So these actually escalated past warning shots, according to U.S. officials this morning. So now they're saying several shots did in fact hit the cargo ship, but did not disable it. And the ship did go into UAE waters, and the Iranians followed it into those territorial waters, continuing to fire before breaking off. And the cargo ship's master did call coalition warships in the vicinity on the radio, including U.S. Navy warships, to ask for help when the incident began. And a P-3 from a country in the region was sent overhead, and the Navy began moving, but the incident was over before the Navy could actually get there. And the Pentagon recently stopped escorting commercial vessels through the Strait of Hormuz, but it's not clear currently if that escort service is going to resume now after the firing against this other vessel yesterday. So they had been escorting commercial shipping, but two of the recent Iranian incidents interfering with cargo shipping in the area is going to make that a new salient point for discussion, I would imagine. So we'll see what happens there. Also, some news out of Ireland this morning. Six men have been arrested in the Republic of Ireland over a plot to assassinate Prince Charles and his wife, the Duchess of Cornwall, who are supposed to be visiting Ireland next week. It's understood that all of these men have links with the Continuity and the Real IRA, both of which are illegal in Ireland and designated terrorist organizations in the UK. So two of these suspects were arrested in the Glenfarne areas of Leitrim, roughly an hour away from Mullaghmore, where Charles is due to visit as part of a four-day tour of the Republic. The six men arrested, aged 21 to 62, are being held at Garda stations all across Ireland. And our Irish police are known as the Garda. They discovered explosives and weapons at various sites in more than 20 raids intended to disrupt Republican activity. And the Garda sources told the Irish Daily Mirror that they believe they have penetrated an IRA plot to assassinate the royal couple. And these operations follow major police action by armed Irish police officers who conducted a series of raids again across Ireland. And bomb experts actually sealed off an area of Cortown in Co-Wexford as they dealt with a suspected device. And the police sources told the Irish Mirror the Garda had been monitoring a number of people over the past few months. And ever since it was announced that the British would be coming to Ireland, there has been an increase in security. Nothing is being left to chance. In relation to these arrests at Co-Leitrim, the source claimed that there were two improvised viable devices in the car as well as a handgun. So these six men being questioned on suspicion of directing terrorism, membership of an unlawful organization, and possession of explosives. So again, not really sure if the rumors are true or if they actually did foil a plot to assassinate Prince Charles. But I find this very interesting that all of this is coming out right now after we had the large story yesterday of David Cameron speaking about all of these sweeping changes that are going to be taking place across the UK, because the UK has had a history of being too tolerant of people, apparently. Been just too quick to suffice to say, you know, hey, if you guys are following the law, we're going to leave you alone. So David Cameron came out this week saying that's not going to be the case anymore. We're going to meddle in all of your lives completely, especially if you have some sort of position that's anti-democracy. And I'm sure the IRA and the Continuity parties, they probably all fall right into that anti-democracy party. So you can see how the slippery slope is being cast there in the UK, and they're continuing to ramp up the fear. Not to say that this didn't actually happen, but again, just it's just a kind of coincidental that this is all happening while there's this national drive to stamp out anti-democracy sentiment, and we'll see how that comes down on people like us and Kev Baker. And it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Also, more news coming out of England right now. More than 700 potential terrorist suspects have apparently traveled to Syria, and about half of them, apparently, allegedly, according to Scotland Yard, have returned now to the UK. So the UK, returned to the UK, according to Scotland Yard. So according to Scotland Yard, about 350 of people of significant concern who visited the country and are thought to have come back, and police are now arresting nearly one suspect in the UK every single day. So a record of 338 people were detained on suspicion of terrorism offenses over the 2014-2015 year, which is a rise of about a third compared to the previous year. And the Assistant Commissioner, Mark Rowley, who is in charge of police counterterrorism efforts nationally, said more than half of the arrests were related to Syria. So again, they think about half of the 700 people that have gone to Syria to fight for ISIS have now returned to the UK. So again, keeping the fear alive, man, seems like a good time to put some sort of national rule into play that would make everybody a terrorist, doesn't it? Does to me. Okay, let's see here. ISIS TD training back in the UK. What are you asking me there, Truth? Somebody's asking me a question in the chat room, trying to figure it out. More news from Britain too. Again, ramping up the fear. Britain came out yesterday, the defense officials saying that two British fighters had to escort Russian bombers away from British airspace. The UK defense officials said yesterday the Russian bombers never entered into British airspace, but two Typhoon jet fighters were scrambled to lead the Russian Bear aircraft away from Britain. And obviously just more, I don't like these little tiny two sentence stories because they just don't give you any kind of information. They're nice enough to tell you that the Russian bombers never actually encroached on British airspace. So that begs the question, why were they escorted away? But again, it's just to keep that fear alive and to let everybody know that Putin is bad and Russia is bad. And, you know, that's where we are today. Also, a little bit more news out of England. Right now, this idea of a EU referendum is getting kicked around pretty hard in England. David Cameron said that he wanted to have a referendum to decide whether or not the UK was going to stay in the EU, and he wanted to have it by the end of 2017. There's some other people there that are saying we need to probably get this done a little bit quicker, and you've also got pressure from the EU trying to pressure Cameron to keep Britain in the EU. So we'll have to see kind of which way this comes down the pike here. But Mark Carney, who is the governor of the Bank of England, said that the referendum was needed to take place as soon as necessary, because right now the prospect of the referendum was fueling business uncertainty and it could actually hurt the economy if companies start putting off their investment plans because they don't know what's going on. So you can see how Cameron's idea of a referendum, but not really with a good end date, is can potentially be affecting the economy there. So that's what's happening right now. There has been a coup attempt, or a potential coup attempt, in Burundi. This is a East African country, and the president right now has been abroad in Tanzania, and over this whole week, essentially, there's been two factions trying to fight for control of the country, and it's really touch and go right now, so I don't really have a lot of insight on what's actually going on there right now, but there is potential that there was a coup in Burundi, and again, kind of have to wait for some more information to come out about that. So I can't really give you much about that, but if you're interested in that, you might be able to find something. I don't know. Also, news out of Greece right now, just as a interesting side note before we go over into the economic stuff. Greece right now is in advanced talks to sell 51% of its large port there to China. They've actually struck down a deal to sell 67% of that port to China, but now they are toying with the idea of selling 51%. So you can see how the infrastructure sales are going to begin in Greece. And we've already talked about capital controls that are going on there. Obviously, you're not allowed to take out more than 1,000 euros in Greece without being taxed for that. So we're seeing the war on cash. We're seeing the pivot happen between the EU and potentially now Russia and China happening in real time. And just it's interesting, you know, history does not exist in a vacuum. And so I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what goes on there with Greece. But I don't know. I don't understand why we're not calling this a default right now when they basically defaulted to the IMF earlier this week. But we'll see how they kick this can down the road. I want to say this or to give you guys some update, too, on this. Really, I thought this was really funny. Sweden has been obviously battling the threat of Russian submarines lately. We've talked about this a few times. But the Swedish Peace and Arbitration Society actually stepped up to do something about these encroaching Russian subs. And I kind of like what they did here. It's pretty funny. They decided to play on one of Russia's main phobias. And Russians, for some reason, are very anti-homosexual. So these guys took a sign, an animated sign that is waterproof. And it essentially, I don't really know how to describe it. I guess the best way to describe it would be an underwear-clad seaman rocking his hips back and forth. And it's basically, it says, "Welcome to Sweden. We've been gay since 1944. And I really like that. It also sends out Morse code over and over and over. And it says, so you want to know what the Morse code says. It says, "This way if you are gay." So I don't know if it actually worked to deter Russia, but I thought it was kind of amusing that they decided to put the sign underwater. I'll drop the link to this in the chat room so you guys can see it. But kind of made me laugh yesterday. The Morse code part was my favorite part. "This way if you are gay." I don't know. Just goofy stuff. Goofy stuff. We're in a goofy mood here today, guys. I just got to tell you. Okay. Listening to KBS yesterday, they were talking quite a bit about the train derailment that took place in Philadelphia. There have been some more indicators that have come out about that. But in a different story, a completely different story, also happening yesterday, 11 of 13 cars of a very long freight train actually derailed yesterday in Hazelwood, also there in Pittsburgh. The incident was reported at about 10 a.m., again, on a curve in the tracks along Irvin Street and the road was closed to southbound traffic for a while after the derailment. So the State Department of Environmental Protection says there were no injuries and the derailed cars were actually empty. But again, 11 of 13 cars derailed. A lot of these cars were on their tracks and their wheels were separated from the car bodies. It just seems very unusual. I don't think we hear a lot about train derailments. I mean, there has been a few lately, a lot of these oil tankers that have gone off in places like Dakota and stuff like that. But the fact that there would be two train derailments in Pittsburgh in 2 days in a row seems really, really unusual to me. So again, just kind of wanted to point that out. The train was pulling dozers of tanker cars. None of them derailed. And again, not immediately clear why the derailment happened. They say that the train was only traveling at about 10 miles per hour. So that seems really unusual to me. If we get more information on that, we will have to keep you guys in the loop. I want to give you guys a little more update on this gentleman, the engineer who was driving this train, the Amtrak train. I'll tell you what, looking into this guy, he looks about as crystal clean as it could possibly be. This guy has been trying to become a train conductor for a very long time and ended up being an engineer about 4 years ago. Seems like an absolutely upstanding guy. The lawyer says he was not on drugs, was not drinking. He has no recollection of the event whatsoever right now, but he was not on his cell phone. They say he absolutely cooperated with the police. He told them everything that he knew. He also immediately consented to a blood test and surrendering his cell phone. His cell phone was actually off and in his bag where it was supposed to be at the time. So the question really comes back to, and I said this yesterday, these guys that run these routes, you got to believe at some point it just becomes second nature, right? You would think that they would know where they are just by looking out the window and could feel the train speed. And I would imagine that these guys are well connected to the machines that they're running. So I don't understand what happened here, but I'm still believing that this is a very, unusual event. And I think that there's going to be more information coming out about this as we move forward. But again, everybody looking into, this Bostian guy, he graduated from the University of Missouri here. He's got a bachelor's degree in business administration. He's been an Amtrak engineer since 2010, and every single person that he knows absolutely loves him. I mean, absolutely nobody would ever say anything bad about this guy. So I don't think that he did it on purpose, and I don't think that he was even responsible, to be perfectly honest. I think something happened with the controls in the train and that thing went haywire on him and he didn't know what to do. But again, we'll just have to wait and see as more details come out. But the whole thing just seems really, really suspect to me. And I'm sure a lot of you guys out there feel like that as well. Let's look at, some news coming out of Mississippi right now. A fifth suspect has been arrested in connection with the killings of those two Mississippi police officers over the weekend. Arabway Franklin has now been charged with obstruction of justice over the shooting that occurred during a routine traffic stop on Saturday, according to the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. And officers Benjamin Dean and LaCorey Tate, a recent Police Academy graduate, was shot after Dean stopped a gold Cadillac Escalade in the city of Hattiesburg. And autopsy results released by the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation showed that one of the officers was shot in the face and the other one shot in the back. And at least one of the suspects fled in a police car that was later found abandoned. Officials right now are still declining to discuss a possible motive. So that's what's going on there in Mississippi. We've got some bad news coming out of the House of Representatives. The USA Freedom Act and that fantastically Orwellian title did in fact pass the U.S. state's House of Representatives yesterday overwhelmingly with a 338 votes in favor and only 88 against. It is going to be moving on to the U.S. Senate right now. And Congressman Justin Amash, who has the strongest voting record in Congress on constitutional issues, was obviously one of the 88 votes against the Freedom Act. And on his Facebook page, Amash actually explained why he voted the way he did. And in part, he wrote that the bill's sponsors and unfortunately some outside advocacy groups wrongly claim that House Resolution 2048 will end the bulk collection. It is true that the bill ends the phone dragnet as we currently know it by having the phone companies themselves hold, search, and analyze certain data at the request of the government, which to him is worse in many ways given the broader set of data that the companies actually hold. But the H.R. 2048 actually expands the statutory basis for the large-scale collection of most data. It does this by authorizing the government to order the protection of records based on a specific selection term, like a search term used in a search engine, and the records sought still must be relevant to an investigation. So it's possible that court rulings will continue to restrain the government in some fashion, but it's more likely that a court looking at H.R. 2048's language will see the specific selection term as defining the outer limits of what Congress considers acceptably relevant under Section 215 of the Patriot Act. Proponents of the bill say that under the USA Freedom Act, the NSA would be prohibited from collecting telephone metadata under the Patriot Act. So instead, the agency would have to require a warrant every time it wanted to access phone records, which would be held by telephone companies, and officials would need to submit data requests via keywords in order to collect relevant data from the companies. And the bill would also reform the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, or FISA court, by setting up a five-person panel that would offer advice when intelligence agencies are seeking new interpretations of existing law, and some court rulings would still need to be declassified. So again, this USA Freedom Act is storming down the pipe here. They're moving on towards the Senate. I don't know how we're going to stop it, but it is not encompassing anything related to USA Freedom, you guys. It is one of these goofy Orwellian titles that they like to throw at us to make us think that everything is sunshine, rainbows, and puppy dogs, but it's not. They are going to take your sunshine and smash your rainbows and kidnap your puppy dogs. That's essentially what this bill has to say. And they're going to do it through the phone companies. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, we're zooming up on a break here. So I'll probably go ahead and ease back on the news for just a second. We are going to go to this three-minute break. I do have a lot more. We have some pretty important science stuff and some pretty important health stuff. So I'm going to buzz through a little bit more national news. And then we do obviously have some economy news stuff today, too. But I'll keep it light on that since we do have Andrew Gause joining us here in just a little bit. Really excited all of you guys are along for the ride today. I hope you guys are enjoying your Friday. It is almost the weekend, and I hope you guys are gearing up for a good one. We're going to go to this break. I will see you guys on the other side. Keep it right here, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye. Tuesday through Friday.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out through that 3-minute break. And thanks to all of you guys who are in the chat room right now at truthfrequencyradio.com. I just love having you guys along for the ride. Lots and lots of people tuning in to the live stream today. And I hope we're going to get to the bottom of some of these economic issues when Andrew Gaws joins us here in about a half an hour. I mean, talk about an amazing guy, monetary historian and a numismatic expert. He's also an author. I always forget to bring that up. He's written a couple of fantastic books. One of them is called The Secret World of Money, and I have the hardback copy of this, and it's kind of set up in a question and answer type of thing. And if you're trying to get somebody in the loop on just how fake the Federal Reserve is, that is going to be a really good book to offer somebody. And also, he wrote another book called Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, and I think you can probably figure out without too much insight what exactly that book is about. But again, somebody who really tells it like it is when it comes to the global economy. Speaking of global economy, 17% global debt to GDP ratio right now. Yeah, $200 trillion in global debt right now. No big deal, right? We'll get through all this. Nothing's going to happen here. Yeah, we'll see. We'll have a good chat with Andrew here in just a little while. So let's get back into the national news coming here into the United States right now. There has been now news coming out of Albuquerque. A preliminary hearing has been scheduled for August 3rd for Albuquerque police officers Dominic Perez and former ADP officer Keith Sandy, who are both facing charges for allegedly murdering a homeless camper. And the judge will listen to testimony and decide whether or not there is sufficient evidence to proceed in trial. This obviously has to do with the shooting of James Boyd, the mentally ill man who was fatally struck by bullets who were fired by Sandy and Perez during an hours-long standoff. A lot of people have seen the video of that event on YouTube, and it's, to me, there is no alleged in the allegedly murdering charge. It's absolutely, they murdered this guy for, you know, illegally camping. What in the hell is illegal camping? The guy wasn't hurting anybody. He was out just trying to be alive in the world. But of course, you're not allowed to be alive in the world anymore without paying somebody something. That's just the way it is these days. I tell you, you got to wonder, you know, being born onto a planet and not having to pay to be here. And it's all because of the bankers, guys. It's all because of the bankers. And anyway, I hope these two gentlemen who were law enforcement officers, I hope they go to jail for murder and if not a lot more, because this guy, James Boyd, clearly, according to the video, surrendering, had his hands in the air, was moving towards the ground, and they shot the heck out of him. So apparently also the lapel video from Mr. Sandy was never reportedly found. So convenient enough. They're trying to figure out who actually fired the fatal bullet between these two guys, but I think both of them should be struck from the law enforcement entirety, and probably ought to go to jail for a very long time as well. Speaking of jail for a very long time, A North Carolina man who tried and failed to join the terror group ISIS has been sentenced now to 20 years in prison, according to the Justice Department announcement yesterday. This guy is David Ray Morgan. He was 44. He was arrested last August at New York's JFK Airport after returning from the Middle East. There, he said he had tried to travel from Lebanon through Turkey and on to Syria to join ISIS, but he was stopped at the Istanbul airport and sent back to Lebanon. And in Lebanon, he told a freelance journalist working for NBC News that he wanted to join ISIS because, according to him, they've proven time and time again that putting Islamic law in as a priority is a good thing, and the establishment of Islamic State as a goal is a good thing. He says he's not a radical. By Western definitions, he might be a radical, but he just considers himself to be a practicing Muslim. So he said that he suspected that the U.S. and other law enforcement agencies were already hot on his heels, but he decided to come back to the United States anyway because genius, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, he was arrested on a gun charge, and he eventually pled guilty to attempting to provide material support to ISIS and also a felony possession of a firearm because he has already been convicted as a felon from an unrelated 1997 incident in which he fired a weapon into occupied property, according to a North Carolina court document there. But anyway, tried to go join ISIS, was not successful. For some reason, got all the way back into the country and even got a gun and was at a gun range and still wasn't arrested. But anyway, finally got arrested, and now he's going to jail for 20 years. So don't do that, ladies and gentlemen. Also, a new report coming out, this is pretty startling to me, a new report coming out about the Department of Homeland Security just yesterday. Apparently, they do not maintain any data on how many illegal immigrants they allow to stay in the country through their prosecutorial discretion. So this failure could have some pretty large national security implications, and this is from the agency's Inspector General's report earlier this week. They say that the department's ability to accurately assess the results of policy decisions and to make needed changes is important given its modern approach to immigration enforcement. Though the Obama administration has implemented new policies that rolled back immigration enforcement through executive action and also expanded the use of these prosecutorial discretion, these policies did not include a requirement to collect data on these prosecutorial discretions for annual reporting. What that means is DHS and Border Patrol essentially at their own discretion can let someone go thinking that they're going to come back and, you know, appear to court date within 90 days or something like that. But they don't keep any records of these people. So we really have no idea right now how many of these people have been turned loose in our country. And this is not just some crazy internet person saying that. This is the actual Inspector General from the Department of Homeland Security. So there you go. How warm and fuzzy are you guys feeling right now about the Department of Homeland Security? Because I'm not feeling that good about them whatsoever. I got to give this story too because this is just bizarre, and it starts off funny, but it really isn't funny. But again, just have to kind of point this out. An Oklahoma man has now pled guilty to first-degree manslaughter for asphyxiating his stepfather with his own underwear in a move that the police are calling an atomic wedgie. Yes, this is a real article, guys. Brad Davis, who's 34, he pled guilty earlier this week. He faces between 4 and 35 years in prison for the death of his stepfather, Denver St. Clair, back in December in McLeod, which is east of Oklahoma City. And a mitigation hearing is set for Wednesday with sentencing scheduled for July. But Davis allegedly pulled St. Clair's underwear over his head and around his neck where the elastic band left ligature marks, and the cause of death was blunt force and trauma and asphyxiation. So don't give people atomic wedgies, guys, because you don't want to do that. And again, I don't think this gentleman meant to hurt this other guy. They were just having a fight, and apparently if stepfather had been talking bad about this Brad Davis's mom, who obviously is married to the guy who he gave the atomic wedgie to. So again, don't give atomic wedgies because you don't know what's going to happen. And apparently now this poor guy's going to go to jail. Not that the other guy should have died because of it, but you know, I don't know. There you go. That's what's happening in Oklahoma. Good times. Great oldies. Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay. Let's move on to some economic news here. Right meow. Checking out what the indices are doing. The Dow is down, but very, very little. We're still well above the 18,000 mark. We're at 18,240. Only down about 11 points in early trading today. The S&P also down just a very, very small amount. We're still well above 2021 and 15. Dollar index is on the dive today, though. I will tell you, we are at 93.29. I'm sure the euro is rising. Yep, we're up 0.25% on the euro above 114. We're at 114.39. And your Bitcoin today trading down just a touch at 238.65. Gold down a little bit today, but still well above above 1,200 now. We're at 1,222, and silver still actually on the rise a little bit today. $17.52 will get you an ounce of silver, $59.38 for a barrel of crude oil, and we'll see if Truth can come through if he's still in the chat room with a BDI feed, because he has the only magic BDI feed that works on the planet. I'm pretty sure. Global debt now in the region of $200 trillion, according to the McKinsey Global Institute. They recently published a report highlighting the bloated, unsustainable levels of debt that have been accumulating globally and the huge risk when interest rates begin to rise again. That's probably going to be my very first question with Andrew today. Now, we talked with Kenneth Shorten last week. He writes for the Daily Economist, and he agreed with Peter Schiff and also myself in that there is absolutely no way, shape, or form that the Fed is going to raise rates either in June or September or any time ever in the history or the future of our country. It is not going to happen. Just go ahead and exhale. We're going to see quantitative easing number four. I will bet you a dollar against a hole in a donut that that's exactly what's going to happen. So McKinsey concluded that the total debt of the globe was $199 trillion in this little covered report back in February. And again, that was 3 months ago. So with a probably pretty easy to assume now that the figure is likely over $200 trillion. And with a global population of 7.3 billion, this works out to be just over $27,200 for every man, woman, and child alive today in the world. So if you're bringing a child into the world today, that's the story. They already owe the global bankers $27,200. And almost 29% of that debt, $57 trillion, has been accumulated in the relatively short period just since the end of the financial crisis, if you want to call it that, or just since it began basically back in 2009. So just 8 years, we've added $59 trillion to the global debt. This has increased the global debt to GDP ratio by 17%, and according to McKinsey, poses new risks to the financial stability and may in fact undermine global economic growth. I think that is kind of an understatement, but there you go. We got to talk a little bit. Oh, somebody coming through with the BDI. The BDI is up. Thank you, Who, for coming through with the BDI. BDI up 3 points today to 637, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're following the BDI, that is where we are at. Also, Truth coming down. Oh, no, we got an update again. Truth says the BDI is down to 634, down 3 points today. So there you go. It's either between 634 and 637, guys. That's what we definitely know for sure. Okay, we got to talk a little bit about a couple of banks here, the big ones. Barclays, JP Morgan Chase, Citibank, Royal Bank of Scotland, and UBS, all expected now to plead guilty to felony charges. But, even if they do plead guilty to felony charges, they probably aren't going to be going to prison, lose their jobs, or be forfeiting their rights to vote. So when five of the world's largest banks do plead guilty to an array of antitrust and fraud charges as soon as next week, well, life is probably going to go on without so much as a hiccup. And the U.S. Justice Department is prepared to announce as soon as next Wednesday that Barclays, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and the Royal Bank of Scotland will collectively pay several $1 billion and all plead guilty to criminal antitrust violations for rigging the price of foreign currencies, according to people who were briefed on the matter, who all are speaking, of course, on condition of anonymity. But most, if not all, of the pleas are expected to come from the bank's holding companies. And the people said this is a first for Wall Street giants, because until now, they have only had subsidiaries of their biggest bankers' units plead guilty. So this U.S. Justice Department is also preparing to resolve accusations of foreign currency misconduct at UBS. As part of that deal, prosecutors are taking the rare step of tearing up a 2012 non-prosecution agreement with the bank over manipulation of the benchmark interest rates. And the people said, citing the bank's foreign currency misconduct as a violation of the earlier agreement UBS made, the banking unit signed that agreement back in 2012. Again, they're now expected to plead guilty to the earlier charges and also now pay a fine that could be as high as $500 million rather than go to trial. So what exactly is going on here? Well, the Justice Department basically signed a non-prosecution agreement with UBS, provided that UBS was going to stop messing around with the benchmark interest rates, and it turns out that they did not stop messing around, and the Justice Department got very upset with them, and so essentially is tearing up their non-prosecution agreement and is going to be going after them for actual guilty pleas. These guilty pleas are sort of scarlet letters affixed to the banks of this size and significance, and it also represents another prosecutorial milestone and a broader effect to crack down on financial misdeeds. And yet, as much as these prosecutors would like to punish these banks for the misdeeds, they are also mindful that too harsh a penalty could imperil the banks that are the heart of the global economy. So you can see there is a very tenuous balancing act going on here, and these pleas are probably going to be more symbolic than sweeping. And to put that into a very fine point, behind the scenes in Washington, the bank's lawyers are now seeking assurances from federal regulators, including the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission and the Department of Labor, that the banks will not be barred from certain practices after the guilty pleas. So while the SEC's five commissioners have not yet voted on the requests for waivers, which would allow the banks to conduct business as usual despite being felons, the people briefed on the matter expect a majority of the commissioners to grant them. So here we go. Essentially, we're still going to have felons running the largest banks, and it's not going to have any actual impact on what's going on. And of course, who knows where the fines for all of these misdeeds from the banks are actually going to go, not to you and I or any place else, I can imagine. But anyway, you can see how this is a pretty shady deal, and it's going to be even more shady going forward, because even if they get the guilty pleas, still not going to actually have any effect. They're still going to be going on business as usual. So just, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Largest banks in the world, all being currently run by felons, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody's going to go to jail. Nobody's going to do anything. That's just a par for the course, right? Also, one day after the city of Chicago took a pretty big hit on its credit rating, a leading bond rating agency further downgraded the Chicago Public Schools debt to junk status. And the Moody's Investor Service applied the Ba3 rating to Chicago's Board of Education's $6.2 billion worth of debt. And like the city, the Chicago public school system is facing a huge problem with increased requirements for contributions to teachers' pensions. And we had this story earlier this week that the Supreme Court of Illinois basically struck down a law saying that the state of Illinois could limit pension contributions by anybody there involved with a pension inside the state. And that got struck down. So you can see how now Illinois is really under the gun here, along with a bunch of other states who are essentially not in a good position right now. And I think that Supreme Court revelation is going to really sink their boat. But both the city of Chicago and its school system being knocked down a peg or two. Also, expose by Bloomberg that does in fact confirm Gallup's demise of the confidence of the consumer, Bloomberg's non-government sanctioned consumer comfort index fell again for the fifth straight week. This is the longest streak of uncomfortableness since 2013. The index is barely above unchanged for the entirety of 2015, with people in the South and Northeast feeling the misery the most in the last week. And oddly enough, only the 65 plus age cohort actually saw an improvement. I would have to go back and look at the Dow being up 300 points this week as probably an indicator of why those people are so happy in the 65 and over category. Also, in terms of money here in the United States, I didn't know that this thing was going on, but there's been an effort called Women on 20s and is hoping to add some diversity to the people who are memorized on the American currency. And as it stands now, people say that our money is filled with nothing but white male aristocrats that are long dead, and we should probably change up the people who are on the dollar bills here. So a group tallied hundreds of thousands of votes all throughout the country, and after two rounds of voting, Harriet Tubman was actually the person picked to be replacing Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. I have no problem with Harriet Tubman being on a bill. What bothers me is taking Andrew Jackson off of one of our bills, because he's the only person that actually ever killed the bank here in this country. I'm pretty sure those were his last words. "Ugh, I killed the bank," right? So he's actually the only hero that we really have on our money, as far as I'm concerned. Not to say that Harriet Tubman is not a hero, but I think that they should choose a different bill if they're going to replace somebody. Because again, Andrew Jackson, not somebody that I think gets enough credit for what he did against the central bank here in America. So I don't really want him to go away on that one. Okay, let's hop into some science and tech news right now. Here's some really big news coming out of China. The Chinese web search engine Baidu unveiled its latest technology earlier this week, saying it had now taken the lead in the global race for true artificial intelligence. Meanwhile, the company's superconductor scanned more than 1 million images and taught itself to sort them into about 1,000 categories, and did so with a 95.42% accuracy, the company claimed. adding that no other computer has ever completed the task at that same level. Google's system scored 95.2 and Microsoft scored a 95.06, according to Baidu there. But no worries at all. You don't have to worry about, because all three of those computers very, very much far exceed human performance. So you don't have to worry about one being better than the other. Bottom line is they're all better than us at this point. So this concept of deep learning or self-learning algorithms is not unique to Minhua, yet Baidu seems to have the upper hand. It is not slowing down. The company also has announced plans to build an even faster computer in the next 2 years, one capable of 7 quadrillion calculations per second. That is absolutely astounding. So, Brave New World, ladies and gentlemen. Good stuff. What else is going on here? There's a pretty cool story at ZME Science, and I will drop this into the chat room. You guys know that I am super duper pumped on 3D printing, but the guys at GE actually took it to a whole nother level. There's a different type of 3D printing that I had never actually heard of before, and it's essentially additive. An additive probably isn't the right word to use here. So a 3D printer, what it normally would do is use polymers like ABS, and it would essentially melt layer by layer to form a part to your liking once it cools down, right? That's how this works. But engineers at General Electric demonstrated that practice is not that complicated, or not complicated enough to print parts out of metal alloys. So what they have been using is this advanced technology that is an additive metal. So basically they are using layers to stack metal on top of each other. So they melt a metal powder layer upon layer, and they're able to build very complex 3D structures. And so this team at GE, using this new type of 3D printing, essentially took it upon themselves to put together an entire jet engine. They scaled it down, and they used the model of a jet engine that you could essentially use for radio-controlled aircraft. But they did it. They printed this thing out in 3D printing, hand-polished all the parts, put it together, and ramped it up to 30,000 RPMs. It's pretty darn impressive, I'll tell you. And again, if you're looking to invest in new technology, this is going to be a big time move, as far as I'm concerned. I'm trying to find in the article. I always highlight way too much stuff, so I can never actually go back and see what it is that I'm looking for. But again, I put it in the chat room so you guys can check this out. Very, very interesting. And the video of the actual engine firing is pretty darn impressive. They don't say exactly how long they fired the engine for. But again, looked pretty solid to me. Pretty cool stuff. Also, thieves right now siphoning money from people's credit cards, banks, and PayPal accounts, first by tapping into their Starbucks mobile app. So here's a safety update for all of you guys out there. Anybody using that Starbucks mobile app, people are breaking into those Starbucks accounts online, adding a new gift card, transferring funds over, and then repeating that process every time the original card reloads. It's been happening more and more across the country. So just as a side note here, that app in particular is not a safe app for you guys to be using, the Starbucks app. When we have Gary Molievsky on the show next week, we'll talk a little bit more about this and how you can kind of tell what apps you're going to be pulling down to your phone that might actually be safe and might not be safe. So we'll talk about that again with Gary coming up here next week. Let's hop into some health news here really quick. There was a new report right now that IntelliHub has broken. Key data outlining the toxicity of glyphosate, Roundup, has now been recently recovering, revealing that Monsanto knew about the cancer-causing effects of glyphosate and Roundup more than 35 years ago, as did the EPA, and yet neither entity chose to make this information known in the interest of public health. Both Monsanto and EPA knew full well, at least as early as 1981, that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup herbicide, causes cancer in mammals. And earlier studies conducted during the late 1970s and early 1980s appear to have documented cancer-causing effects from glyphosate in rats, mice, and dogs. And this information was buried by Monsanto with the blessing of the EPA, using something called trade secrets as an excuse to keep the findings of these studies confidential. So Monsanto successfully cherry-picked and manipulated a cohort of study data to suggest that glyphosate was safe. And, of course, now here we are today, with the rest being history, except previously hidden memoranda that have now since come to light reveal a whole lot more about the true nature of this pervasive chemical pesticide. According to Sustainable Pulse, uncovered EPA memos from the early 1980s point to research showing that glyphosate did in fact cause significant damage to the kidneys of rats. And these same studies also noted hyperplasia in the rats, which is considered a very early and very necessary step in the formation of cancerous tumors. In 1981, the EPA scrutinized this data and pressed Monsanto for more information before granting a no observed adverse effect level for glyphosate. And then a year after that, Monsanto actually obfuscated that data and convinced the EPA that glyphosate was safe under the guise that conflicting data was suddenly a trade secret. And they go on to say the evidence shows that by 1981, both Monsanto and the EPA were aware of malignant tumors and precancerous conditions in the test animals, which were fed small doses of glyphosate in these secret feeding experiments. And although concerns were expressed at the time by the EPA committee, these concerns were later suppressed after the weight of conflicting evidence brought forth by Monsanto, some of it involving the inappropriate use of historical data, as all of it being dubious quality. And none of these studies currently is available for independent investigation. So one of the ways that Monsanto covered up the true dangers associated with glyphosate was to substantially reduce the amount of the chemical given to the study rats. Now exposed EPA memos reveal that the test rats in the new studies were suddenly being given only 1/100th of the amount of glyphosate given in earlier studies, with no explanation at all for the drawback. So in 1986, an EPA memo admitted that this was a curious move by Monsanto, adding that the glyphosate doses tested were nowhere near the maximally tolerated dose, and if the glyphosate dose had remained the same, remarked by then an oncogenicity... somebody who works in a peer review committee relating to cancer, I think would be how you would say that if you could say that word, said that, of course, tumors would be induced if the feeding levels had remained the same. So kind of likens it to the tobacco industry, you might recall, never really recovered from its shameful legacy of lying to the public about the safety of cigarettes. But Monsanto's massive cover-up of glyphosate cancer-causing effects takes evil to an entirely new level. And as the multinational company not only lied about their herbicide safety, but also actively manipulated the federal agency tasked with protecting the public health in the process. So there you go, Monsanto. Hopefully we can all continue to vote with our dollars and get them out of business. I have to tell you, too, real quick, the Agricultural Department of the United States now, the USDA, they have developed the first government certification for labeling of foods that are free of genetically modified ingredients. This comes as some consumer groups are pushing for mandatory labeling of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. And the certification at this point would be voluntary, and companies will eventually have to pay for it. But if approved, the food would be able to carry a USDA process verified label, along with a claim that they are free of GMOs. So you can see, at least we might potentially be moving in the right direction here in the country. I hope that we can get out from under this whole glyphosate nonsense sometime soon. I was watching my neighbor spraying his front yard the other day, and I didn't even stop to go talk to him because I was just like, I'm not going anywhere near that stuff. Anyway, we're going to go to this 3-minute break. Lots more news at redpillreports.com. Appreciate you guys all being along for the ride. Keep it right here. Andrew Gause will be joining us in just 3 minutes. We're going to have a really good conversation and figure out what's going on in the economy and how we can all be prepared for whatever lies ahead. So keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. Appreciate all of you guys in the chat this morning. We'll be right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on, because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
You're listening to the True Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Welcome back to the program. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. We are moving into the second hour of the broadcast today on the 15th day of May. Very, very excited to be welcoming back to the program Mr. Andrew Gause. He's pretty much one of our very favorite contributors to the Red Pill Reports because he really tells us exactly what's going on in terms of geopolitical and economic events around the world. He is a numismatic expert, somebody who understands the grading of fine coins and can give you guys a lot of advice on how to prepare for some of the things that are coming down the pike. He's also a monetary historian, which makes him an absolute asset for us here to talk about everything that's going on, both from a historical perspective and also trying to do a little projection onto the future. I always forget to mention the fact that he's a fantastic author as well, guys. There's a couple of books that I would recommend that he has written. One, The Secret World of Money, kind of a question and answer book. It would be great to give to somebody who maybe doesn't really understand exactly what's going on in the financial markets here in the United States, especially the fraudulent Federal Reserve and the actual fiat currency and all of that kind of stuff. Absolutely great book. And then he's got another one more recently out called Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. And another really great read, and if you guys are into economic stuff, these are great books for you guys to have. USGoldCoins.com is the website where you guys want to go and learn more about everything that Andrew has to offer. And so, without any further ado, Andrew, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Pleasure to be back.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. It seems like every time you come on the air, more and more craziness is going on around the world. I think maybe we ought to start with Greece today, because obviously this idea that the IMF paid the IMF with or through the proxy of Greece, it doesn't make any sense to me, Andrew. I don't understand why we're not calling this a technical default. But do you want to maybe, for people who don't know exactly what's going on with Greece, kind of bring us up to speed, even up to the minute right now? Because I know right now they're in negotiations with China to hawk off like 51% of their major port there. I mean, we're talking about a pivot move, I think, towards China and Russia, but I'm definitely interested in what your opinion is on that, sir.
Well, no question, the assets of Greece are kind of thrown onto the market in a sort of a garage sale. Mm-hmm. And the IMF maneuver, you're correct. Now, how many of us out there, though, have taken a cash advance on our credit card to pay a debt? You know, that's essentially what Greece did. The only difference would be taking a cash advance on your credit card and then paying that same credit card with the cash advance.
Right.
Now, they don't necessarily know that you're doing it, you know, if you do it correctly. But I think in this case, the IMF was fully aware. It's funny when the credit card companies send you those cash advance checks, you know, they say right on the bottom of it, can't be used to pay any account. You know,
right.
You can't pay us back with this. But yet that is exactly what Greece has done here. And again, once again, it demonstrates the level to which institutions will go to avoid a sovereign default, especially in the case of the Eurozone country. You know, the talk at the beginning of the year and the close of last year was a Greek exit, right? Brexit.
Right.
Everybody was sure that the Grecian government was going to pack its bags and leave the Eurozone. Not going to happen. This is just the beginning of what they will stoop to, if you want to call it an underhanded move. They don't view it as that. they'll do anything in their power to prevent a technical default.
The key thing here to me was the fact that they didn't actually even borrow cash. They used the SDR allotment that the IMF had given them. Do you want to maybe kind of just delve into the SDR and what the ramifications of are of that? Because I don't know if everybody out there really understands what that means, that they actually just paid them back with SDR, you know, basket money.
Yeah, it's a unit of account that's already in existence. So, in effect, it didn't affect the money supply. You know, unlike a maneuver which would have caused an increase in the supply of money, this they did with their special drawing rights. So, special drawing rights are an international reserve asset that are created by the IMF, and they represent a basket of the key currencies. So. Mm-hmm. You have the euro, the dollar, the British pound, and the Japanese yen. And these are all included in a basket and tied in their value to the value of an SDR. So as the IMF creates SDRs and allocates them to their members, there's a pool of them out there that Greece had a piece of and used them. And I guess the best way to describe it would be, you know, you've emptied out the bank accounts, you've, you know, taken all the change out of the cushions,
right.
And, you know, now what do you have left? Well, we have this legacy here, and they've effectively given that away. So I would bet those SDR wind up in the account of China, which seems to be building up their SDR position for inevitable entry into the basket sometime in September.
Do you think it'll be September? Because I was reading that the IMF was thinking October 1st was going to be the day that they would expand the SDR basket. And what do you think, if that does happen, is going to be the effect on the global economy?
Well, many would think it's inflationary, but in truth, you know, China has to give up some of its already captured resources in exchange for these SDR. So, you know, it'll take the pressure off a little bit of inflation by forcing them to kind of convert from whatever they've stashed, be it treasury bills, bonds, notes, cash, euro. They kind of surrender that pile of current assets and take in a pile of SDR, which gives them parlay into the International Monetary Fund, but very little else.
Right.
So they're paying for panache. The idea that the Chinese currency would be included in this basket is appalling to me, because they have a history of default, and if there's a default by China at any point in the future, or by any of the countries really associated with the SDR basket, that could send the world's currency units into turmoil, as now there's no peg. So that's kind of where we are with the SDR.
Okay. Well, now, what about, I've been reading a lot about the potential disclosure of China's actual gold holdings. This has kind of been floating around on the internet saying, you know, the IMF is going to end up trying to actually put a finger on how much gold China actually has. And then there's this other ancillary issue of the Shanghai Gold Trading Corporation. I think we talked about it a little bit last time you were on the air. But I'm just still kind of wondering what your feelings are as we start to transfer over from the MLBA over into this new physical gold market, what that's going to do, and if you have any insight on, you know, how much gold China has and how that disclosure might actually affect their inclusion with the SDR, or maybe it will affect the price of gold here in our country.
You know, the Shanghai Exchange reminds me a lot of Bitcoin. You know, until there are some reserves built up, it really is not going to have any significant impact. You know, it's one thing for Virgin Atlantic to accept Bitcoin for their flights. Mm-hmm. It's quite another thing for them to store those Bitcoins as a unit of account. what they do is as soon as they get them, they sell them and get dollars. And this appears to be what's happening on the Shanghai Exchange. No one's building up any gold there.
It
comes in, it goes out. It comes in, it goes out. You know, withdrawals are keeping pace pretty much with deposits. And so unless and until they build up a nice pile of standing still gold, you know, somebody decides to start storing gold there, mm-hmm. then maybe you'll see some domination or at least some competition from that market. But for the present, you know, North America is where people stash their gold and their silver. And I think it's going to take quite a while for China to or the exchange to make an impact or have an impact on worldwide gold prices. We pretty much absorbed the exchange with a, what was it, like a $15 price increase?
I think so,
which
yeah.
Took out the premium that existed between North American exchange prices and Chinese exchange prices. And no doubt the Shanghai Exchange is the largest gold exchange in the world.
In terms of physical, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and it is the law that, you know, anything that goes on in China in terms of gold has to flow through there.
Right.
So you can keep a pretty good eye on the official gold holdings, but the unofficial ones, that's a target that's hard to pin down.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, certainly not, going to be any more transparent whether that's an IMF condition or not.
Really? You don't think they'd be more transparent than the COMEX right now?
Well, if you compare them to the COMEX, yeah.
Oh, okay. Isn't that the other side of the coin? I mean, then that's kind of the two choices that you're left with these days, right? Is trading through COMEX
and
trading through.
Yeah, but if the indication is that somehow membership in the IMF is going to force some transparency as to the true gold holdings in China, I don't think that's something to hope for.
Okay.
I don't believe that we'll know how much gold they have until it's too late. And unfortunately, it'll be a lot bigger than official figures indicate.
What do you mean by that, until it's too late?
Well, he who has the gold makes the rules. You know, that's the ultimate golden rule.
Right.
So in a world of fiat currencies where the majority of the wealth of the world is denominated right now, believe it or not, in treasury debt, sovereign debt of the United States, sovereign debt of Europe, any cataclysm in the bond market or any serious disruption in paper currencies, electronic currencies, causes folks to rush back to that 5,000-year-old standard gold.
Yeah.
And you don't want to wake up in the height of a crisis and find that, you know, China is the number one holder of gold in the entire world by multiples. Because then, talk about a transfer of wealth, you know, we'll quickly turn into a third-world nation. And China will be number one, no question
right.
about it.
But you don't think that's a likely scenario that's going to play out?
Yeah, you know, it's 50-50. I'll tell you what, I'm buying gold. So, I mean, I have $20 gold pieces stored away, and I view that as the only protection against that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's entirely possible that this is what they have in their mind. You know, convertibility of the yuan has been a goal of the Chinese government for quite a while.
Right.
And having a broad acceptance in the international marketplace would really be a feather in their cap and would boost their position in the world and perhaps give them a chance to take on a dollar-dominated world. But unless and until there's some faith in their currency, they're not going to see that leap.
Mm-hmm.
So many have speculated, and this could be the case, given China's voracious appetite for gold, that their intent is to somehow link the yuan to gold.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is done,
go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, if this is done, it would be the only gold-backed currency on the planet, and I think the more secure-minded would run to it.
Right.
given some sort of assurance that they would actually live up to the contract. You know, I'm in my vault right now. I have silver certificates issued by the federal government mm-hmm. of the United States that say on them, this promises that there is $1 in silver payable on demand in the Treasury of the United States. I can't get it. It's
right.
been repudiated. So, you know, at the end of the day, if you're given a certificate for gold, it's only as good as the issuing entity. And in the case of silver certificates, these were repudiated and are no longer valid. So if China did come out with a gold-backed currency and somehow the world started accepting it, there's nothing to say that they wouldn't also repudiate their obligation at some future point. So confidence is the name of the game. I think physical possession gold is the only protection against counterparty risk, be it, you know, Chinese or U.S. or Euro.
Mm-hmm. Well, I fully agree with that, too. I'm a big fan of the precious metals, especially as we seem to be inching our way or not even really, I mean, footing our way into this war on cash on a global scale. I mean, it seems like every time I turn on the news, they're doing something else to make either the acquisition of cash almost impossible or the use of cash to be, you know, frowned upon. What are your feelings on this whole global war on cash with Denmark's new move to try and alleviate the obligation of retailers to accept cash? I mean, this seems pretty crazy to me, Andrew.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. But we've been marching headlong into a cashless society for the better part of two decades. When I first started addressing the issue in the 80s, it seemed to me that we would not quite be as far along as we are now. 96% of everything that we call money in the United States is electronic.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, you know, it's showing clearly only $1.1 trillion in printed money in the system. So with people thinking that they have a collective $9 trillion, well, let's look at MZM, which would be a better figure. Money with a zero maturity, published by the St. Louis Fed, indicates that Americans believe they have $13.2 trillion in their bank accounts, not invested. So not in CDs, not in bonds, not in stocks or real estate, but in money with a zero maturity, ready, liquid cash.
Okay.
So how does that translate? So we all think we have $13 trillion in the bank, and the Fed tells us on their own balance sheet that there's only $1 trillion printed dollars. If everyone went to the bank tomorrow and just said, give me 10% of my money, that would be it. There wouldn't be enough to go around.
That's right.
So this idea that, you know, moving money and paying for things electronically has sort of been set on our plate to consume for a couple of decades. And the younger generation has adopted it wholeheartedly. I mean, these folks don't use cash at all.
That's right.
In New York City here, everything is paid for with a debit, credit card, or the phone. You know, this new Apple Pay system allows people to just swipe their phone.
Right.
And they walk away with the goods. So we're accepting the cashless society without it being forced upon us, because mm-hmm. this was really all the craze then was, oh, they're going to force us, right? And my thought then is the same as it is now. If you're waiting for somebody to come and brand a barcode on your forehead, you're missing the whole game, because, you know, personal intrusion and marks on your person are not necessarily required. But in the absence of one of these electronic methods of transferring money, you could be out of luck. Now, I know folks today that live an entirely cash life. They withdraw cash from the bank and pay for everything with cash. But as you indicated, Denmark is going to say, well, hey, you don't have to accept cash anymore. If you're mm-hmm. a merchant and you want to just demand that people pay you with an electronic method, then you can force it. So
do you think that we're going to see?
How far are we from?
Yeah, I mean, do you think that's going to bleed over into our country here soon?
Well, Chase Bank just announced, for example, that you can no longer pay your credit card bill or your mortgage payment or any obligations to the bank with cash.
How can they do that? I mean, it says legal tender on it. To me, that's a slam dunk, man. I go in the bank, I've got my cash to pay my mortgage. I get them on video saying, no, we won't accept that. And you just walk away with your mortgage because they have just violated the law. Am I crazy or how are they even able to do that?
Let me take that to a different level for you, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I know here in New Jersey, they have us convinced that the right to bear arms means you can wear a short-sleeved shirt. Okay? but here is this clause in the Constitution, right? Tell me this isn't a slam dunk. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt.
Hmm.
How slam dunk is that?
Well, it's super
slam
dunk.
So, yes, the legal tender laws require merchants to accept. We'll see what the courts decide, but it's obvious to me that what they want to do is what they do. Mm-hmm. And whether this is a violation of the spirit or even the letter of the law, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, so if they will ignore that, then why on earth wouldn't they ignore the legal tender laws? I mean, those legal tender cases are from the 1860s, you know.
Right.
Oh, that's a bad law, and we'll just change it. So I'm not heartened by the fact that we have a very thin string to hang by in demanding that they accept our cash as payment in terms of debt. But I don't think that it's going to be as easy as you describe. Hey, you have to take this cash or I'm canceling the debt.
Wow. I can't even imagine that they would be able to get away with something like that. That is just astounding. And what strikes me too is this, didn't the same bank come out and say they weren't going to allow people to store cash in their safe deposit boxes unless they were of a collectible nature? I mean, they don't want you keeping cash anywhere unless it's in their savings account, and we can see globally they're starting to move to negative rates on these savings accounts. So to me, this is just a clandestine way to just snake away more value from all of us.
You're absolutely correct. You know, the LA Times estimated the underground economy at $500 billion a year. And, JPMorgan Chase has made it very clear that you're not allowed to store cash in the bank in their safe deposit box. At the same time, they've said that if there's cash in the safety deposit box, it's a violation of policy and they can seize it, and they're going to convert from a two-key system to a PIN system. So it means that with a four-digit PIN, safety deposit box can be opened. And imagine this scenario. We're switching from a two-key system to a PIN system. You have to come in and be assigned a PIN and get access to your account while we change the lock.
Right.
You need to remove the content, right? And who's standing there while you're doing it, you know, and who's watching as you're pulling it out. Now, mm-hmm. You open the box and you have a few $20 gold pieces and some old silver dollars. That's all good. And that's been exempted from a seizure. But currency, paper currency, hard cash as we know it, is subject to seizure on site. And then it's up to you to prove that it's your money and that it was gotten lawfully. So, and all you have to do is open up a copy of USA Today and go to the seizure section and see the weird cases like United States versus $22,500 in cash.
Right.
And
yeah,
they're just
asset
seizing
forfeiture
the cash.
Stuff, right.
They sue the cash. So the idea that you can store your wealth in cash and somehow escape scrutiny, no. As we move towards not only a high loss of privacy economy, but a high tax economy where they're clutching for revenue like Greece, you know,
mm-hmm.
everywhere they can find it. They have to be able to see everything in order to understand what's taxable and what isn't. And it can't have you piling up your cash in safety deposit boxes and avoiding taxation. So that's what the war on cash is all about. As the noose tightens, they don't want any way for you to hide.
So what do you think going forward is going to happen? Do you think the noose is just going to continually tighten, or is there going to be a backlash from all of this? Because I've got people in the chat room right now using a lot of colorful expletives to talk about these people who aren't going to accept their cash. I mean, this to me seems like you're right on the edge of mutiny here if you start really messing with people's savings, the amount of stuff that they've got a vested interest in. This is real dangerous territory for me for a banker to be in.
Yeah, no, if I was a banker, I'd be mortified as well. And, you know, nothing gets people on their ear more than the discussion about this. You know, mm-hmm. You can't use cash, or that somehow just because you have cash, you must be bad. But the Supreme Court has already upheld this scenario, and the presence of cash is prima facie evidence that a crime has been committed.
Wait a minute. So just the idea that you are holding cash in your hand is evidence that a crime has been committed someplace.
Yeah, for you lawyers out there, it's a prima facie evidence that a crime has been committed. So with that and nothing more, the mere presence of cash is enough to allow a law enforcement officer to delve further. And to me, that's, if you want to store your wealth privately, hearken to, you know, look to the Constitution for your solution. Mm-hmm. A pile of silver dollars is treated differently from a pile of Federal Reserve note dollars. They're not the same creature.
That's right.
And subject to the laws of Title 31, which is money and finance. Remember, a Federal Reserve note is not money.
That's right.
A note for money. And it can therefore be treated however the issuing entity wants to treat it. And, you know, I can't believe that folks just daily store their wealth, store their life savings, store their family's well-being in Federal Reserve notes. And, you know, they proudly show their bank account statement, and this is how much money I have in the bank. Well, you have no money in the bank. You have claims on money.
That's
and
right.
And you deposit them or depose them in a bank. It's not even yours. So subject to the laws of finance, you may or may not get it back. That's not good enough for me. I much prefer hard physical cash.
I would agree with that. Just a quick question from the chat room before we jump off into this break. Credit unions, do you have any love in your heart for credit unions or smaller banks and things like that? Or are you completely like anti giving your money to somebody else at this point?
Well, you know, we all remember It's a Wonderful Life, right? Jimmy Stewart, and how much do you really need? Because, you know, this is your money. I like the concept of credit unions. I like the protection provided by credit unions. But I know that they're subject to the same sort of bad management and getting caught up in nonsense that has nothing to do with the depositors. So if I have to deposit my money somewhere, I prefer a credit union or a state bank, state chartered bank, not a national bank. However, there is that side of the coin that says if you're going to keep money in the system, keep it in the too big to fail banks, because they'll never be allowed to fail. So, you know, smaller institutions will be taken over and taken under, and maybe even bailed in. But the too big to fail guys are, you know, they seem to always be standing. So,
man, we got to come back.
I'm torn on that. I go with my original concept, which is I don't keep cash in the bank.
I hear you. We need to come back and talk a little bit about the Justice Department looking for these guilty pleas against all of these major bankers. I don't know if you read that article, but even though they're getting guilty pleas, they're also working behind the scenes to make sure that these bankers, who will all be felons, by the way, still be able to go ahead and operate their business as usual, which is exactly what we want. We want to make sure that these too big to fail banks are all run by felons officially at this point. So anyway, we'll come back from that. I want to talk a little bit more about that and a little bit more about what we kind of think is going to happen from the Fed here in our country in terms of a rate increase, or kind of what I think is probably going to happen, more of a quantitative easing number 4. But we are going to go to this 3-minute break. Please, ladies and gentlemen, do check out usgoldcoins.com. We are going to come back and talk about some solutions type stuff and things that you guys can do to hedge your bets against all of this ridiculousness that's going on in the economy. So keep it right here. We'll be back in 3 minutes, guys.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Dave.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again.
It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow, why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Squared Radio with Brooks Atkins.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I'll tell you, this is the fastest hour in the world that I get to spend with Andrew Gause when he comes onto this program. We always have so much fun talking about exactly what in the world is going on and trying to get to the bottom of some of these economic transitions that are getting ready to take place. And just before the break, we were kind of talking about a bunch of random things there, Andrew, and I wanted to come back and just get your idea on a potential, just for the record here, of a Grexit, a Brexit, or an Itexit, any of the exits to things that might happen over there. Do you really feel like Greece is going to end up staying in the Eurozone, sir?
Absolutely, yeah. I know if you remember one of those movies, Goodfellas, I think it was, where they gave everybody a chance to leave the bar, and then they locked the door and said, okay, now you can't leave. That's sort of where we are now. You know, now you can't leave. Much the same way that Lincoln preserved the Union, but that very same sort of activity would be engaged in if Greece tried to exit. It would be foreclosed upon. Even right. If it had to be done militarily, they would not allow Greece to simply get up and leave the euro.
Wow. So what do you think is going to
not
happen
think,
then to the people
not
there?
That I think they would. I mean, I can't imagine the Greeks shooting themselves in the head and then the Italians saying, oh, that's a good idea, let's do that. The impact would be devastating. Never mind the foreclosures that would sweep the country. The ability of Greece to maintain an internal currency without external influences is impossible, even though the bulk of their revenue comes from tourism, I cannot imagine they could sustain themselves with the drachma again.
Hmm. So even as Cyprus, you know, was reported by Bloomberg the other day to be pleasantly surprised by the invite to join the BRICS Bank, do you think that they are going to kind of play both sides of the fence for a while, or what do you think is going to happen in the next couple of months?
Yeah, they surely will. And I think anywhere that they could turn for aid, they will turn to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and of course, in this environment, you have China doing everything they can to increase their influence around the world. So, you know, they'll rush in and be a buddy to anybody who needs help.
Right.
Especially if it's the IMF and the Troika that are trying to squeeze them into getting their mind right. You know, this is the idea that somehow this is an independent group of countries is incorrect. They have surrendered their sovereignty to a monetary authority, and they really have to understand that. And I think Greece will be simply used as an example to make that point.
Oof, that doesn't sound like that bodes well for the people of Greece at all, Andrew.
No, it doesn't. It can't be pleasant. And, you know, the idea that you could inflate your way out of a problem by simply printing additional money is something that they've taken for granted for a great many years.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that, you know, giving it away to join the euro wasn't viewed as the loss of maneuverability that it indeed is. But once you get to this point in the road where you do not have the ability to monetize debt any longer, now you must either sell assets or increase revenue, and neither of those are attractive to the people of Greece.
Well, I mean, do they even have enough assets? Don't they have some another outstanding, ridiculous bill to the IMF coming up next month? And, I mean, it seems like they have just about liquidated every single, you know, skosh of money in the country that they can. I mean, they've taken it in from all of the regional areas. You know, all the money from the government entities all went to the central bank to make this payment, or was supposed to make this payment. Where are they going to get the rest of the money that they need for the IMF?
Well, you know, they're forced to sell any state-owned assets. So anything that a state owns, roads, bridges, airports, you know, think of infrastructure here, all of that can be sold to a company like Macquarie or the Australian entity, or Cintas, which is buying up toll roads here in the United States. You have water utilities, you have railroads. I mean, the assets of a country are enormous when you sit down and put them to paper. And those can all be sold off, you know, privatized.
Boy, I just can't even imagine that would be a better decision than just taking your lumps and trying to start over. I mean, to me, what would your advice be to them? Would your advice be to stay in the euro, or would your advice be to bite the bullet, get out while you can, get out from underneath the Troika, and try and do something to regain your sovereignty? Seems like that's a really big price to pay, selling off all of your state assets, because you're never going to have the money to buy them back again.
Correct. And you're not supposed to have the money to buy them back again.
Oh, that's what that John Perkins guy was talking about in his economic hitman book.
That's right.
Oh,
yeah, these are economic hitmen, no question about it, yeah. And you could see the success of this sort of a plan. So, you know, squeeze the debtor and take all their assets, remove the control. And once that's done, I imagine their foot will come off the neck a little bit, and they'll be allowed to stand a little more freely. But the idea of sovereignty, you know, you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. It's done. The nations of Europe have been usurped, you know, by the euro system.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have a single entity, a trilateral entity, where you have, you know, North America kind of dominated by the United States, Europe dominated by the euro and the ECB, and the Far East dominated by China. So, you know, these three prongs on the three-legged stool allow for a single world government, much the same way as we have a single, you know, monetary system, Visa, MasterCard. It doesn't matter. They're the same.
Right.
You know, dollar, euro, doesn't matter. They're the same. Throw in the wild card, which is the, you know, Far Eastern currency. Originally, I thought it was going to be Japan. But China has just, you know, come out of the shadows and probably will overtake Japan very soon.
Hmm. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the United States right now. I want to know what your – if you had to put a – let's see, if you had to put a number on how likely it is that the United States or the Federal Reserve is going to engage in raising the interest rates anytime soon going forward, what do you think about that?
I don't see that as very likely. The only reason that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates is to defend the dollar. You know, as we discussed last show, when the dollar was peaking out at around 99 on the dollar index and folks were figuring it was going to parity and so on and so forth, it's our turn in the barrel. So we've kind of made that break. And I think we have a dollar index somewhere around 94 today.
I think so, yeah.
Which is indicative, yeah. Which is indicative of a trend, I believe. You're going to see dollar weakness throughout the rest of the year. Now, that's what would cause the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates and nothing else. So, I mean, this is really the wild card when it comes to the U.S., the monetization of debt. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand that worldwide investors have piled into municipal bonds, treasury bonds, corporate debt, every sort of bond issue that there is, not because they're intending to hold these assets for 20 or 30 or 10 years and then get their principal back, but because they know that if rates go from 4 to 2, then you've doubled the value of a 30-year bond. If you can get 4% while everyone else is paying 2, then your bond face value is worth much more than what it says.
Okay.
So a $10,000 bond that yields 4% new bonds are being issued at 2% is actually the order of $20,000 it's worth it. Now, as interest rates start to rise, however, the reverse is true, and that $10,000 bond that yields 4% while everyone else is paying 6 or 8% is worth only half as much.
So right
on the face, it's only worth $5,000. Okay, so in the last 3 weeks, we've had $450 billion in wealth wiped out just as a result of a minor uptick in, you know, a sell-off in bonds. This is beyond the ability of the Fed to manage. I would look for their repo agreements to increase, do everything in their power to maintain, but the market is what's going to push. The Fed will respond. But in the interim, the market is taking upon itself to say, we're not comfortable holding this. And so we're going to dump it. Now, what happens for that debt? When liquidity dries up, that speaks to your point about QE4. You know, that's the point at which I think you'll see the Federal Reserve step up and reengage buying bonds again, because there will be no other market for, no secondary market for these bonds. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a municipal, if you're holding, you know, or other forms of municipal debt, at your portfolio, because bonds are for the last decade.
Hmm. Well, and the dollar index we said was 94. It's actually at 93.4 right now. I'm wondering if is there a dollar index line, you know, as it continues to decline, where you think that will be the point, like we get to a $90, that's the point where the Fed will step in, or do we need to see it go all the way down to like 80s and 70s before anything is done?
Yeah, I think 80s are the area where you'll see the Fed step in. You know, the when gold was 1900, we had a dollar index that was 72, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're a long way from there. And as the Fibonacci guys will tell you, a retracement is in order. And unfortunately, this retracement will wipe out so much international wealth that I think people will decade. That's going to make it impossible for sovereign entities to raise the cash they need to run these enormous deficits.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's going to come from, I believe the Obama administration and the Congress believes that somehow, you know, we can desert, and you know, that's going to save us all. I don't think the trade agreements are going to get us the sort of revenue that this government needs. I think we need to go back to perhaps we need to worry about ourselves and not so much about the rest of the world.
Boy, I think that's a pretty key indicator, man. I'm with you on that one. So let's get into that subject as we're all, you know, kind of worried about ourselves and our own communities and our own ability to protect ourselves with wealth. How what's the best method right now, brother? I know gold and silver, but you as a numismatic expert probably have a little bit better advice to offer in that respect than many other people. So what do we do? How do we hedge ourselves against all this?
it's money, if it's wealth that you've already accumulated and you're worried about what it's going to be worth 5 years from now or 10 years from, you know, gold and silver coins fit in. But if you're a person who doesn't have any wealth, degrees of production. So it sounds so primitive, but build a food pantry and build a garden and produce and grow your own. This is very, very key here. And then invest, build yourself foodstuffs that you use. And I'm not talking emergency food, stuffs that you use, non-perishables. Shop for, because there's going to come very high prices market, and you'll be able to at least defend yourself. And
Andrew,
I'm
going to interrupt you for just a sec. I'm going to disconnect from you and reconnect because our connection is getting really fuzzy, and I don't want anybody to miss any of this. So just hang by the phone right there. I'll be right back, okay, brother? Sorry about that, kids. Sometimes we get a little fuzzy on the old Skype connection. We'll see if we can get Andrew back with a clearer connection.
And we're back,
and you sound a little bit better. So pick it up right where you were, sir.
Well, essentially that means of production is what would be important here. So you have manufacturers throwing around interest-free financing for equipment. You know, if you're in business, this is the time to add that equipment that will make you more efficient. If you're an individual, anything to increase your means of production. As to where to invest your money, the last place you want to keep it is sitting liquid in MZM. So you don't want money in the bank, in your checking account or in your savings account or in a money market fund or in a bond fund or in any kind of a debt-based asset. Equities, you know, there's some good equities, Tesla, Apple. But if the economy takes a hit, which I strongly suspect it will, you know, the value of equities could fall. So there are great stocks. However, there are some pitfalls to watch there. Gold and silver coin, for me, is the ultimate in protection. And I keep fully 85% of my wealth in gold and silver coin for the long term. Short-term money, I keep enough around to pay the bills, and that's it. Other than that, you know, batten down the hatches, because worldwide dollar debt has doubled since 2007. And the problems of 2007, rather than solving them, we simply magnified them and put them off. And
right.
Now, unfortunately, you know, 7 years later, there's a lot of it coming due. And the Fed is either going to decide to monetize that and create massive inflation, or they're going to allow people to default, which, if Greece is any indication, is not going to happen. I see it more likely scenario, an inflationary cycle, similar to 77 to 80, where we're grappling with, you know, 15 and 20% annual price increases and fighting to increase our wages at the same time and not seeing the COLA adjustments that we see, or that we saw from 77 to 80. I think older folks are going to suffer much more than the younger generation.
Hmm. Well, what do you think if there's going to be some sort of trigger that sets this whole thing off? Are we looking at like a bond bubble bursting, or do you think it's going to
yes.
be something? You think I didn't even get to get any other options.
Yes.
You think the bond
yeah,
bubble
no,
bursting?
Yeah, no, yeah, it's going to be a big bond default. Don't know where it's going to come from, but it's going to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that bond default will trigger what I call pinata effect. Do you ever see that, right? When
no.
People just put the blindfold on, take the stick and whack anything. Yeah. So, you know, if Chicago falls into default, which is a very real danger, and Chicago defaults, then people will start looking at all municipal bonds and say, oh, wait a minute, if Chicago can default, then why can't Oshkosh? And so I'm going to sell my Oshkosh bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And this will just trigger an event that, unlike any other, because folks understand that the secondary bond market is almost taken for granted. So people buy 30-year bonds with the idea that, oh, it's a bond fund. Here's a checkbook that goes with it. You could just write a check. I know it's a 30-year bond, but you could just write a check and spend the money next week. Well, that's subject to the liquidity of the bond. And if, you know, these bond funds start selling for 30 and 40 cents on the dollar, I think you'll see people running for the hills. With no one to buy the debt in the secondary market, there's only one choice, and that's for the Fed and other central banks to simply pump the monetary press and reduce the value of currency in order to pay off this debt.
Wow. And I can see that the flight to stable commodities during that time is probably going to be pretty, you know, relevant to all of us here that are holding gold and silver, right? Because everybody's going to jump out of that bond market, not going to have any idea where to put their cash. And I would imagine that it's all going to go into gold and silver.
Or $170 million works of art. Did you see that?
I did, Picasso.
At the committee? Stunning. Stunning. You know, $180 million for a Picasso. Now, for me, the rarest numismatic coin ever struck in the United States is coming up for sale. It's the very first silver dollar in proof condition. I bet it probably won't go much over $10 million. So the essence of value there, I mean, if that Picasso is worth $160, that one should be worth $50. So United States rare coins are dramatically undervalued. I would urge anyone out there who's never encountered an old silver dollar, a half dollar, old $20 gold piece, you know, stroll down to your favorite bookstore, get a copy of the Guidebook of United States Coins, Red Book, and look at some of the coins that are available. I just bought yesterday a 1787 Fugio cent. Now, this was the cent that Ben Franklin wanted to make our national motto. He put it on there. You know what it is?
No.
Mind your business.
No way. You've got a coin that says
your
that?
Business.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. Yeah, he put the time on it and you know, a ring of circles, and that he wanted that to be the national motto. Never minding God, you we trust. Mind your business. That was the national motto that Ben Franklin wanted, and that's the motto on this coin. I cherish it. I paid $5,000 for it. It's in mint condition.
Right.
You know, that's a coin that I think you could conceivably add a zero to in the coming decade. It could be easily worth $50,000. So, to me, that represents a much better store of wealth than $5,000 in a bond fund or $5,000 in stocks or $5,000 in cash in your mattress. You know, that's not a good way to store wealth.
No, or a $130 million Picasso painting. Because, again, you know, it doesn't seem like from a bartering, you know, standpoint, if stuff really does go that bad, that would be something that anybody would care about after the fact, you know?
Well, the rich, you've heard, keep getting richer, yes. And, you know, we're minting new billionaires every day.
That's
so,
right.
You know, 160 million, when we're now measuring the world's first trillionaires in the Rothschild family, the billionaires are, I don't want to say a dime a dozen, but, you know, we're getting more and more billionaires every day. China added three last week. So as we go forward, the people that are qualified to own something like that will grow in legion. The rich get richer, and the poor, of course, get poorer. So as the rich get richer, they want to own what no one else can own. That's why I think something like this Fugio cent or even that Picasso painting has a place in everyone's portfolio. The Rothschild family, their maxim for wealth is, you know, one-third in securities, one-third in real estate, and one-third in art and collectibles. And, you know, if you follow that formula throughout your life, there's always a period where one or the other is doing great, and at the end of the day, you'll do fine.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, because I was reading an article the other day talking about how a lot of the global elite are buying huge amounts of real estate, like really, really expensive homes like that. And one of the reasons that that they said they were doing that was because they could brag about it. Now, because they can't really brag about gold. Gold isn't one of those things you want to go, hey, I got, you know, 30 ounces of gold at my house. That doesn't really work. But you could tell someone, you know, you own this ginormous piece of property that no one can steal from you. And I just found that to be kind of interesting that some of these people still are focusing on bragging rights, essentially, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, my dog's bigger than your dog. And certainly before we had grading services, there was always argument about, you know, which coin is finer and so on. So there's been some leveling of the playing field, but I would expect that to continue. Folks always want to own what no one else can have. And, you know, that's available to you in the numismatic market. One of a kind coins are widely available at numbers that make a lot of sense. As for real estate, they could tax you out of it. And
that's
so
right.
It's not, you know, yeah, you own it and you've paid the mortgage off, but because you can't maintain the taxes, now you've lost your home. And so that's not the case with numismatic coins or with Picasso's. You know, it's, it's a much better way to store your wealth.
That's a good point. So I want to give you guys an opportunity out there to get in touch with Andrew. I know, Andrew, you usually like to give an offer of information that people can get if they go to your website and they make a phone call. I'm hoping that offer is still on the table today, sir.
Oh, yeah, the Red Pill offer. Yeah, that's all you have to do is say that you heard it on the Red Pill Report. And what I have are three audio CDs. They're half-hour audio CDs, you know, the old-fashioned kind that you get in the mail, and you put them in your car, and right, and you actually listen to them. Oh, yeah. Sure, I suppose we could send an MP4 or whatever they use these days. But if you're like me, you like something to read, I have the three audio CDs that you can listen to. One is Protecting Your Wealth. That's commercial. It's how to buy gold coins. Mm-hmm. The second one is the definition of money. Nothing commercial about that. It explains what money is and what it isn't. And then the third, the Federal Reserve. So much disinformation out there about this entity. This breaks it down in easy to understand language so that you know the difference between the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks and why it's important. And then I have the three free reports, which are protecting your wealth in a pamphlet form. Comparison of gold bullion versus coins, and other basic information that will guide you in the acquisition of gold and silver coins. So you can get all of this material free if you just mention you heard it on the Red Pill and give us a call at 800-468-2646. That's 800-468-2646. Again, mention the Red Pill Report. You'll get them free. The audio CDs alone are $30 value, so make sure you mention that, Red Pill Report, and get this entire package absolutely free sent to your door.
So nice of you to offer that to our listeners, and I really do appreciate that, Andrew, because I think that, again, there's so many people out there, it always strikes me as unusual how unsaturated the world is with this truthful information. It just strikes me as crazy when I'm talking to somebody and they have zero idea about the Federal Reserve, or they don't have any idea what a fiat currency is. And I really think that if you're going to figure out how to be an advocate for yourself or for your family, you got to figure out who the adversaries are. You got to figure out where the pressure is going to be coming from in the future, and I think those CDs are just an outstanding offer. And then so you also have people working with you at U.S. Gold Coins that can help people make decisions on what to purchase in terms of numismatic coins and also gold and silver in bullion form. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, we guide folks on how to avoid the pitfalls. Like, you know, instead of buying bricks and blocks and bars of gold and silver, maybe you buy coins made of silver for slightly over their actual silver content. And in this way, you escape any sort of confiscation and reportability. So it is, it's important to understand the difference between the two. We don't deal in bullion. We don't steal, we don't steer people to bullion, but we'll certainly offer a bullion alternative if all that you're interested in is gold and silver content. You don't necessarily have to buy that very rare coin in order to, get something that's exempt from reporting, exempt from, confiscation, and sure to protect your wealth.
I love that. Yes. And you've mentioned that before about buying,
I'm sorry,
in that mid-range.
I want to emphasize this is, this is important. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We buy gold and silver coins. They don't make them anymore. So if you have an old gold or silver coin and you want to know what it's worth, you know, don't hesitate to use the 800 number, because I don't have a single inventory source that I can turn to. The only way that I can get rare coins to sell is to buy them from people.
Okay.
So before you walk down to your local We Buy Gold place and give away your rarity, give me a call and at least talk to one of my people and find out if what you have is significant and worth keeping, or at least make sure that you understand what it is so that you can get the maximum money for it. That is the biggest service. As sure, we build portfolios, we help people buy, but we also help people sell, and that I think is much more valuable.
I agree with that, and I really appreciate you taking some time out to join us on the program today, Andrew. We are completely out of time, brother.
Amazing how it flies.
It does go by quickly. Ladies and gentlemen, please do check out U.S. Gold Coins, and don't be afraid to call that 800 number and take advantage of that offer. I think there's a lot of good information, and like, you know, it's a CD. You can listen to it, and you can pass it on to other people in your family so people are in the loop. It's the best way to take care of your home and your heart and your community as far as I'm concerned. So that would be my recommendation to all of you. It is Friday. We are out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you guys all hanging out with us. We will see you guys on Monday, but I will be back this evening for the Woo Crew, so I will see you guys later on. Take care, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. If I don't see you later on tonight.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.